Have ye walked keeping yourselves blameless before God? Could ye say, if ye were called to die at this time within yourselves, that ye have been sufficiently humble, that your garments have been cleansed and made white through the blood of Christ? These are poignant questions from the pages of the Book of Mormon. Through them, the prophet Alma encourages us to ponder our personal worthiness. That is the topic of this collection of Stories from General Conference. In the April 1988 General Priesthood Session, President Thomas S. Monson gave a short account of a king who lacked worthiness.
Are our reaching hands clean? Are our yearning hearts pure? A great lesson is learned from the pages of history, a lesson on worthiness, from the words of the dying King Darius, king of all Persia and even of Egypt. His rival, Alexander the Great, had been declared legitimate son of Ammon. He too was Pharaoh. Alexander, finding the defeated Darius on the point of death, laid his hands upon his head and attempted to heal him, commanding him to arise and regain his kingly powers. He said, "I swear unto thee, Darius, by all the gods, that I do these things truly and without fakery." Darius replied with a gentle rebuke, "Alexander, my boy, do you think you can touch heaven with those hands of yours?"
In the October 1989 General Priesthood Session, Elder Joe J. Christensen provided a contrasting example of one whose hands were worthy.
None of us know how long we're going to live. In the Book of Mormon, Alma asks the question, can you look up to God at that day with a pure heart and clean hands? I remember when the need to have clean hands and a pure heart became very meaningful to me. It was just after my friend David Carlson and I had graduated from Preston High School. We were happy with the fact that it was the same school that President Ezra Taft Benson and Harold B. Lee attended when they were growing up, even though they'd changed the name from the Oneida Stake Academy to Preston High School. We still had some of our classes in the same building. We thought that 1946 was the golden year of athletics in Preston High. That year, our teams won the district championship in every sport, and in basketball, our team won the state championship. And that was in the days when the small high schools played against the big ones. David was a good friend to me, and I think to everybody in the school. He was a fine student. He worked hard and received excellent grades. He achieved in scouting and seminary and was a well-coordinated athlete. David was a member of the basketball team, and his playing was one of the reasons our team won the state championship. Soon after high school graduation, David went to the hospital for what everyone thought was a routine operation. But there were some complications. Infection set in, and the next thing we heard was that he had died. We could not believe it. At age 18, David had died. What a shock. I still remember how painful it was to lose a good friend. His funeral was held in the stake center. Everyone seemed to come. It was like a crowded stake conference with standing room only. Bishop Eberhard included in a statement in his remarks that made a powerful impression on me. He pointed over to the sacrament table and said, "When David knelt there to bless the sacrament, I knew that he knelt there with clean hands and a pure heart. I never had to worry about what he had been doing the Saturday night before." I thought that was one of the finest compliments he could have paid to my friend. And I wanted to live in such a way that my bishop would not have to worry about what I'd been doing the night before. I'm sure that all of us could benefit from making a similar decision.
We never know how much time on earth we have, so it's wise to live worthy at all times. In the April 1986 General Priesthood Session, President Thomas S. Monson shared a conversation he had with President J. Reuben Clark of the First Presidency about staying worthy.
It was my opportunity to know President Clark rather well. I was his printer,
And I have the privilege to visit with him on numerous occasions and to see a side of him which he rarely reflected, a keen sense of humor. I was sitting in his office one day going over a manuscript when the buzzer sounded, and he said, "Uh-oh, there's President McKay calling another meeting," and he got up to leave. And I was just making conversation, and I said, "President Clark, I suppose you have many meetings every day, and they're all important." He turned around and with a little impish smile on his face and a wink in his eye said, "I wouldn't be too sure about that last statement," and went to the meeting that he'd been summoned to attend. On one occasion, I was taking some press proofs to his home late one evening. He lived at 80 D Street here in Salt Lake City. His lovely daughter, Louise, welcomed me and took me up to the library where he sat behind that huge desk, which was just piled high with books and papers. He said, "Come in, Brother Monson, and sit down. Listen to this." He was reading from the Old Testament, the book of Ecclesiastes or the Preacher. And he said these words, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man." He then paused and exclaimed, "A treasured truth, a profound philosophy." My dear brethren, I love and I cherish that word, duty.
The prophets have repeatedly stressed worthiness in dating. In the April 1988 General Priesthood Session, President James E. Faust related a personal experience about the responsibility he felt to stay worthy with a young woman he dated.
"When you boys become priests and elders and begin to date, you need to know that the best place to date is at church or in church-related activities. As you date, you will be entrusted by a girl's parents with their most cherished blessing. You will have the responsibility not only to protect her well-being, but also her honor, even above your own safety. One of the duties of manhood is to safeguard womanhood. When you become a parent, you cannot shirk this responsibility to be concerned for the dating of your own children. Before my first mission, when I was attending the university, I invited a lovely young lady to attend the university's junior prom dinner dance. I had dated this fine girl a few times before. Every time we came home from a date, her father would be in his big leather chair, fully dressed, waiting for us. As I went to pick her up the evening of the dance at the university, her father said, 'What time will you be home?' I responded, 'Sir, as you know, this is a special dinner dance at the university. The dinner is scheduled to be served after the dance, so we would like to stay out later than usual.' I added, 'You may not wish to wait up for us that late.' He simply said, 'I'll be waiting for you.' The dance was special, but the dinner service was terribly so. I soon developed indigestion. The longer it went, the worse I felt. When we got back to her home, I found the father had kept his promise. There in his big leather chair was this wonderful concerned family patriarch, waiting for one of his fine daughters to be safely back under his own roof. He said something like this, 'What keeps you out so late, James?' It is a great responsibility and a transcending blessing when a man and a woman make vows and covenants and receive the ordinances of marriage. When within the covenant of marriage, a man and a woman invoke the great powers of creation, they literally become partners with God in creating new human life."
No matter what stage we're at in life, we should always follow standards of worthiness. The church publication, For the Strength of Youth, outlines the dating standards for the youth. Young singles can rely on these standards in a world of temptation to help them stay worthy. In the April 1989 General Conference, President James E. Faust explained why firm, unchanging standards are necessary.
Thomas R. Rowan, commenting on the lowering of television standards, said, Author and commentator Malcolm Muggeridge once told a story about some frogs who were killed without resistance by being boiled alive in a cauldron of water. Why didn't they resist? Because when they were put in the cauldron, the water was tepid. Then the temperature was raised ever so slightly, and the water was warm. Then a tiny bit warmer. Then a bit warmer still. And on and on and on. The change was so gradual, almost imperceptible, that the frogs accommodated themselves to their new environment until it was too late. The point that Mr. Muggeridge was making was not about frogs, but about us and how we tend to accept evil as long as it is not a shock that is thrust upon us abruptly. We are inclined to accept something morally wrong if it is only a shade more wrong than something we are already accepting. Close quote.
Satan may entice us with things that appear innocent, good, and fun. He uses these things to tempt us into sinning. To explain this concept, Elder Robert D. Hales used an analogy about sheep on his uncle's ranch. He told this story in the April 1987 General Conference.
Some years ago, as a young man, I had the opportunity to work summers on a ranch with my wise Uncle Frank, who taught me an important lesson about shepherding. He described to me how lambs are enticed and led away from the safety of their mother's side and the flock that loves and cares for them. Cunning coyotes send their pups to play near the flock, running, rollicking, tumbling. It looks so inviting to the little lambs. The frolicking pups look like they're having so much fun that the lambs are enticed to wander from the protective environment of the flock and their mother's nurturing side. In their innocence, they fail to observe the adult coyotes are moving in a circle, ready to pounce and cut them off from the flock, ultimately killing and devouring them. This is also Satan's way. He uses our free agency to entice us with apparent good times. Soon we may become entrapped, and if not eventually brought back to the flock, we will not be able to go to the temple, enter into the covenants, and receive the ordinances necessary to attain eternal life, that we might live in the presence of God the Father and Jesus Christ.
Both the Bible and the Book of Mormon warn us about false prophets that come in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. We must always live the standards of the gospel to avoid these wolves that Satan uses. In the April 1988 General Conference, President Ezra Taft Benson used an example from the Old Testament story of Joseph, who escaped temptation because he lived the gospel standards.
We should put God ahead of everyone else in our lives. When Joseph was in Egypt, what came first in his life? His job or Potiphar's wife? When she tried to seduce him, he responded by saying, "How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" Joseph was put in prison because he put God first. If we are to are faced with a similar situation, where would we place the first loyalty? Can we put God ahead of security, peace, passions, wealth, and the honors of man? When Joseph was forced to choose, he was anxious to please God than to please his employer's wife. When we are required to choose, are we more anxious to please God than our boss, our teacher, our neighbor, or our date?
Our last story is by Elder L. Tom Perry from the priesthood session of the October 1985 General Conference. He used another Old Testament story about one who chose to remain worthy.
One of the heroes I've always enjoyed reading about is Daniel of old. During the period of time that he lived, Israel was not faithful in keeping the commandments of the Lord. Because of this, she lost her power and was not able to defend herself against her enemies. Strategically, she was in an awkward position. There was powerful nations of Egypt and Syria bordering her on the north and south. Instead of doing battle on their own land, these two nations took turns overrunning Israel and making her their battleground. It was under these conditions that Daniel was born. When he was just a child, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, besieged Israel. And as a part of the conquest, he went into the holy temple and took out the sacred vessels and took them back as trophies. Then, to make his nation even stronger, he took hostage all the bright and promising children of Israel. And as the scriptures record, he said this: "Children in whom there was no blemish, but who were well favored and skillful in all wisdom and cunning in knowledge and understood science, and such had the ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and in whom they might teach the learning and tongue of the Chaldeans." Daniel was one of those taken back to the palace as a slave of Nebuchadnezzar to be trained in the king's ways in order that he might use him and the knowledge he obtained to make his empire stronger. It was not long after Daniel had been taken from his home in Jerusalem that he faced his first test. The young men of Israel had been apportioned a daily amount of the king's food, consisting of meat and wine. Daniel knew in his heart, because of the training of his parents, that the food provided by the king would not be good for him. He knew that they would defile his body. So he went to the prince over them and pleaded with him that he not be required to eat the meat or drink the wine of the king. The prince was astonished at this request. He did not dare allow Daniel the privilege of eating anything other than what the king had ordered. He was so afraid of losing his position, or perhaps even his life, if the king found out. Daniel understood this, but he had been taught correct principles. He bargained with the prince this way: he would only eat the food that he had been taught would be good for him for just 10 days. After that 10 days, if his countenance was not fairer and his appearance more healthy than all the rest, he would then eat the king's portion of meat and drink the wine. Of course, because Daniel followed the Lord's way, at the end of the 10th day, he was the strongest of all that had been taken before the king. Terry, many times in your life, you will be tested, tried, and tempted to use those things that you've been taught are not good for your body. You may be ridiculed and laughed at when you refuse to partake of them. But just as Daniel of old received strength by obeying the Lord's commandments, you too will be blessed in the same way. The Lord's laws are eternal. Just as sure as we follow them, we will receive His blessings. For He has promised us that we will receive health, wisdom, and great treasures. We'll run and not be weary, and walk and not faint, if we follow His way. Daniel passed his first test and was blessed by the Lord. At the end of the 3-year training period, these young men were brought before the king to be judged. Daniel had not wasted his time and had studied hard. He had used his efforts to gain knowledge and skill and learning and wisdom. He was now prepared for the test given him by the king. As the king met with them, he found none to be like Daniel. Of all that were there in matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of him, Daniel was found to be 10 times better than all of the king's wise men. Terry, you've been blessed with a great mind. Sometimes you'll be tempted not to study as hard as you could, thinking you do not need to. No doubt conditions may not always be the best in the schools you attend. But within you is the power to grow and gain knowledge and understanding. You can achieve if you'll apply yourself. Seek wisdom out of the best books. Challenge this great mind of yours with diligent study. The Lord has promised that what you learn here will rise with you in the resurrection and be to your eternal good. Prepare yourself for this life and the life to come. Daniel passed his second test. Now the third test. It was a third challenge given to Daniel, which came as the result of a change in administration. Nebuchadnezzar died. A new king came to rule Babylon. The new king was drunk with his wealth and power. After he was crowned king, he held a grand party and invited heads of states from the lands round about to be his guests. It was a very worldly affair with much drinking, dancing girls, rich foods, and other attractions of the world. In his drunken state, the king sent for the sacred vessels, which had been taken from the holy temple. He desecrated these vessels by drinking wine from them. His action so displeased the Lord that the Lord wrote some words with his finger on the wall. This frightened the king so much, he trembled that his knees did knock together in front of his royal guests. When not one of the noble and wise men could interpret what had been written on the wall, they sent for Daniel, who, of course, with the power of the Lord, could interpret what was written there. Daniel let the king know of the Lord's displeasure with him. This story has always been interesting to me because those at the party had to send for Daniel. Even though he was one of the most prestigious of all the wise men, he did not attend such an event. He would not permit himself to be present in such an evil and worldly surroundings. He had met the third test. He had separated himself from the evil environment, which could only fill his mind with unrighteous thoughts and actions. Terry, be as strong as Daniel. Keep distance between you and the evil practices and places of the world. Do not let the wrong kind of books, pictures, and other reading material be near you to tempt you even with the slightest glance. Such materials can intoxicate and destroy your mind just as sure as liquor and drugs can intoxicate and destroy your body. Have the courage to turn off unfit television programs. Stay away from videos, movies, and videotapes that would fill your mind with evil and violence. Remember what the Scripture has said, "For as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he." The fourth challenge which came to Daniel was far, far more important to him than even life itself. The king had selected 120 princes to preside over his entire kingdom. Over the princes, he had placed three presidents to be their leaders. Daniel was selected to be the number one president. You see, he did not have to go along with their riotous, unrighteous living to be recognized and sought after as a person of great worth. The other princes and presidents were so envious of the power given to Daniel, they sought to find ways of discrediting him. The Scriptures record how frustrated they were when they found in him to be faithful in all things, without error and fault. When attempts to find him in error failed, they had to devise another plan. By observation, they knew that three times a day, Daniel went into his chamber and prayed to give thanks to his God. The only plot they could devise against Daniel was to make prayer unlawful, thus subjecting him to their laws. They were successful in obtaining a royal statute outlawing any petition to anyone, save it be the king, for 30 days. The king signed it, making it law, and the violation of this law would cast the offending person in the lion's den. Daniel's faith in the Lord was strong and vigorous. He continued his prayers and, of course, was quickly discovered and brought before the king. The king was bound by the law, and even though it grieved him greatly, he was required to sentence Daniel to the lion's den. After the sentence was passed, the king was so troubled he could not sleep all night. Early in the morning, he rushed to the lion's den to see if Daniel's God had protected him from the lions. His joy was exceedingly great when he found that Daniel had been protected by the Lord and was alive and unarmed. The king was in awe over this great miracle and declared that Daniel's God was the living God and steadfast forever.
Elder Perry pointed out how Daniel's obedience and dedication to the Lord helped him to do what was right in several situations. May we do the same. This has been Stories from General Conference on the topic of worthiness. If you have feedback or comments on this or other programs on the Mormon Channel, or if you have a thought you want to share that may be used on the station, call 1-877-MY-LDS-321. You can also contact us on our website at radio.lds.org.